It is Saturday, July 18th. We have a few loose ends to tie up before the week officially closes out. Business leaders are obsessed with learning. They attend seminars and study strategies until their notebooks are full. The problem, according to recent analysis in the startup space, is that they mistake this notebook filling for actual progress. Market value isn't found in how much you know. It's found in how fast you turn that knowledge into a working system. When founders hoard information instead of testing it, they create a dangerous gap between their potential and their product. Market conditions change while you're busy studying. If you don't deploy your new strategy by the afternoon, you've already lost the edge. It's a shitty realization for a lot of people. We like the comfort of the classroom, but the market only pays for the execution. The most agile firms don't spend months planning. They test, they fail, and they iterate in real time. Speed isn't just a metric here. It's a competitive moat. If your competitors are stuck in a cycle of meetings, your only job is to be the one who actually puts a solution in front of a customer. This need for speed is hitting the manufacturing world, too. Companies are moving away from manual, stopwatch-heavy observation to something called methods time measurement, or MTM. This system breaks labor down into fundamental building blocks. It allows engineers to build a digital twin of a workflow before anyone even touches a machine. The goal is to remove the guesswork from labor costs. You don't guess how long a task takes anymore. You simulate it using standardized data. This lets companies benchmark performance across global sites without getting bogged down in subjective, human-led time tracking. It's clean, it's precise, and it's meant to strip out unproductive motion. Of course, everyone is trying to cram AI into this. The issue is that AI often hallucinates or lacks the rigorous consistency you need for industrial standards. To fix that, the MTM Association is using a validation layer called MTM Motion. It forces AI data through a filter of strict rules. It's a smart way to handle automation. It gives you the speed of a machine without letting the machine make up its own reality. If you're looking for a place where these concepts, speed, data, and structural advantage, collide, look at the upcoming Woodbine Oaks Day, pronounced Woodbine OAKS Day. Handicappers are currently prepping for the King's Plate, pronounced King's Plate, by navigating a notoriously tricky card. The All-Stakes Pick 3 has a 15% takeout. That's a low cost, which is great, but it comes with a $5 minimum bet. You can't just spray money across a dozen horses and hope for the best. You have to be disciplined. You have to be surgical. The strategy here is to focus on horses that can handle the distance, even if the public is betting on sprinters who will burn out in the final stretch. It's not just about picking a horse that looks fast on paper. It's about understanding race flow and track bias. If you're betting on the Nassau, pronounced N-A-Z-A-W, you're looking for horses like Bestie Abbott, pronounced Bestie Abbott, who are improving, rather than favorites who might be coming off long layoffs. It's the same logic as the startup world. You're ignoring the consensus to find the hidden value. This shift toward tournament-style wagering is changing the game for serious players. Instead of just betting to win, they're using feeder systems to enter high-stakes contests like the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. It changes the risk profile completely. When your entry fee is separated from your potential payout, you can afford to be more aggressive with long shots. It turns betting into a series of calculated risks rather than a series of individual events. Whether you're designing a factory floor or building a ticket for the plate trial, the math remains the same. You need a structural advantage. You need to filter out the noise. And for God's sake, you need to execute while the other guy is still reading the manual. That obsession with optimization doesn't stop at the office, though. It's bleeding into how we treat our own bodies. Some health analysts argue the healthcare sector is shifting toward a model that prioritizes disease management over longevity. Critics of current protocols, including some wellness-focused researchers, claim that food systems favor reactive drug treatments and inflammatory inputs, such as glyphosate, pronounced glyphosate, which they argue disrupts endocrine function. This creates a cycle where patients are funneled into symptom management rather than root cause resolution. This is a shitty situation because the system is essentially optimized for sickness. We have a medical establishment that views health through a narrow, reactive lens, creating a bottleneck that keeps patients from the tools they need for true biological optimization. Some practitioners advocate for a five-pillar structure: physical, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, and financial, arguing that ignoring one usually means the whole thing eventually collapses. Meanwhile, the media landscape is experiencing its own version of a structural breakdown. Some local outlets, such as the Peninsula Pulse, are moving away from being passive platforms for every loud opinion. They are reclaiming editorial authority by gatekeeping local conversation to focus on things like school boards and parks. This is not about censoring speech. It is about acknowledging that neutrality in the face of misinformation is a choice, and that the First Amendment protects a publisher's right to decide what actually gets printed. It is interesting to contrast this move toward stricter editorial gatekeeping with the recent public strategy of Hunter Biden. In his recent book and subsequent interviews, Biden suggests that total transparency, even when forced, can be a tool for connection. He argues that by stripping away the private barriers and polished image typical of political families, he has bypassed the usual skepticism people apply to figures in his position. He is trying to foster human connection across ideological lines, even while acknowledging that he fundamentally disagrees with some of the people he talks to. The tension here is obvious. On one side, you have media organizations trying to rebuild trust by being more selective and restrictive about the noise they amplify. On the other side, you have a high-profile figure trying to rebuild his own credibility by removing all filters and embracing a radical, messy openness. One approach assumes the audience is overwhelmed and needs curation. The other assumes the audience is alienated and needs raw, unvarnished access to the person beneath the scandal. Both strategies are reactions to a deeper loss of faith in our institutions. Whether it is the medical industry managing sickness for profit or newsrooms struggling to maintain a civic center, the old default paths are failing. We are seeing a shift where the only way to restore integrity is to intentionally reject the established way of doing things. For the media, it means moving from a repository of grievances to a managed forum. For the individual, it means rejecting the convenience of a sickness-focused medical landscape in favor of a proactive, daily discipline. It is a lot of work, but if you look at the trajectory of our health and our public discourse, the status quo is clearly not sustainable. It turns out that when the systems meant to support us stop working, the burden of maintenance falls back on us. That is a hell of a thing to realize, but at least it gives you a clear choice. You can keep playing by the rules of a broken game, or you can start building something that actually functions on your own terms. Either way, the era of being able to trust the default setting is over. And speaking of things that aren't working quite the way they're supposed to, let's look at the headlines that didn't quite make the main feed. A few other things worth knowing. The American youth soccer system is still obsessed with trophies over actual skill. This culture forces kids to play for results instead of learning the technical basics that elite players need. It is a hell of a way to stunt our own talent pool just to fill a suburban trophy shelf. There is a new standard for AI called the Model Context Protocol. Think of it as a universal USB port for your software. Instead of building custom connections for every single tool you use, this just lets them talk to each other. It is boring, technical, and probably the most useful thing to happen to AI workflows in a while. Iran is currently using cheap drones and the geography of the Strait of Hormuz to keep the United States stuck in a cycle of expensive regional conflict. By forcing the U.S. to deploy high-cost naval and aerial assets to intercept low-cost, expendable drones, Iran is effectively trading pennies for dollars in an asymmetric cost exchange. It is a textbook example of how small-scale technology can turn massive military spending into a financial liability. That is the wrap for tonight. Get some rest, and we will catch up again tomorrow.